A man on a mission with a plan to expand my vision. Yeah, it's either this or it's prison. I'm trying to be free and expand my wisdom. I gotta tell my story. I did it for the journey, the glory. Many men tried way before me. I had to do it bigger cause I had to make history.
Hello and welcome to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, sitting in Annapolis, Maryland. And this is the last ever Ocean Research Project podcast on boat radio. But don't fret. The show is going to be moving into an independent area. It's going to be called single-handed. Well, technically, it's going to be called single-handed sailing. Research is like kryptonite for sailors. The more I talk about science, the less people listen. And I'm still going to talk about it. We're still going to have segments in the show that I get into different, you know, marine-related environmental issues. But I think however much I wanted to promote the nonprofit Ocean Research Project, with the name of the show, it's just been sort of an Achilles heel somewhat for the growth of this podcast. And I get it, man. Like, you guys don't go to boat radio, you know, to listen about science. If you want to listen about science, you go to like research radio. You know, you want to hear about boats. So anyways, it's not just that. I realize that, you know, there's money to be made doing podcasts. And if I go off independent, then I could start actually making, you know, selling advertising and making money. And then I thought about it a little longer and I was like, well, you know, I think it would be more important to use whatever money I can make with a podcast to try to fund Ocean Research Project. So I've decided that, it might be the death of my podcast. I don't know. I mean, I'm taking a risk here. I have a following on boat radio. When I move my show, when I change the name to Single-Handed Sailing Podcast, it's going to be in the same place you find any other podcast, iTunes, and I don't know, wherever it is you find them. I mean, I'm going through a hosting site. It's going to put them out there for, you know, in the same places as every other one. But, you know, I don't know. Hopefully some of you guys will continue listening to the to my podcast when I move over. And if I get enough of you guys listening and I actually start making money, then I'm going to put 100% of that money into the nonprofit organization. I'm going to use this podcast as a fundraising tool because my organization is horrible funding. And year after year, it's been that way. And I need to get over the hurdle, which means I need to be able to actually hire a couple of people, even if it's just part-time. You can't run an organization without anybody working for the organization. I mean, ultimately, I can't expect everybody to be volunteer like I am and like Nicole is and a few other people. You know, I mean, ultimately, people need to get paid. So anyways, it's certainly nothing bad about boat radio. I really, really appreciate Mike. Mike is the guy who started all this. I really appreciate him coming to me at the very beginning, asking me to be part of boat radio. It means a lot that he reached out to me. And, boat radio has a lot of great content and is going to continue to have a lot of great content. I just want to be able to try to bring in some money for my organization. You know, it's going to be a lot more work for me to do, because I have to do everything. To produce the show, edit the show, I have to do everything. But, I think it's going to make me take it more serious. And I like to have some short interviews. You know, I like to bring in people. I know a lot of sailors out there doing big things. And I could just call them up on the phone and bullshit with them. And, you know, this is not an interview-based podcast. And Single-Handed will not be an interview-based podcast either. But I'd like to bring in some short interviews and get people's, other people's opinions. And I'd like to have a technical section where we talk about, tactics, techniques, and so on. So anyways, basically the show is going to be the same as Ocean Research Project. I'm just changing the name and, I'm doing it more often. So it's going to be published, once a week on the first Monday of the week. So every Monday I'll publish a new one. And starting January 1st, you can find it where you find any other podcast, Single-Handed Sailing Podcast. And 2018 is going to be a great year for single handing anyways. You know, we got that movie coming out about Crowhurst, The Mercy. I'm really excited about that. You know, the Golden Globe race, which France has just taken away their ability to call it a race. And they haven't decided yet if they're going to allow them to call it a race or a sailing event. We'll get into all that stuff later on. Once the Golden Globe gets closer, I'll be covering the Golden Globe. There's a French version called like The Long Way, but it's in French, that is much more actually like the real Golden Globe. The rules and the regulations, it's a much more similar. The Golden Globe has sort of gone a different direction a little bit. Anyways, there's going to be a lot going on in 2018. And, you know, it's going to be kind of the year of the single-hander. And so I'll be covering all that and talking to other single-handers and bringing people into the show. And I'll be doing it once a week, so there'll be more content. And, yeah. So, anyways, enough about me and my show. So I did want to talk a little bit about, you know, it's been a while. I apologize. It's been so long since I've done a podcast. And the reason is because I've been trying to set up this other podcast and get myself sort of mentally ready for that, because it's going to be a lot of work once it gets started. But I talked a bit about those two ladies that were rescued in the ocean. When I did that podcast, it was about 48 hours after the news story broke. So we really didn't have a lot of information at that time. We have a lot more information now. And I don't know what to think. I don't know if it was a hoax or not. Like, you can, the one girl who never went sailing before, and she joined the trip like just a couple of days before they left. She's obviously not responsible for any aspect if it is a hoax. She had nothing to do with it, you know. And there's a lot of weird things going on in this story. Actually, it's not weird. There's just a lot of lies. The Force 11 storm that was supposed to be, you know, at the beginning of this entire event, that was supposed to have, you know, we were hit by this big storm. Force 11 lasted 3 days. This is when our boat broke. This is when everything went awry. And this was sort of the event that all the other events came from. You know, this storm was the jumping board, the springboard for their entire story. And there's no NOAA records. The storm never happened. You know, you can check and you can see all the weather activity. It's all stored in a database on a NOAA website. You can find it all. And there was no Force 11 storm. It's not even the right time of year. See, a Force 11 storm that lasts 3 days is a serious winter storm. That's really not the kind of thing you're going to get in the summertime. And it's not the kind of storm you're going to get very often. You might have like one a year, you know, because that's a big, big storm. It's going to be very easy to find that low pressure system looking back through historic weather information. And there's nothing there. So basically, the thing that the springboard that the entire story was based around, this big storm that lasted 3 days, was just a bunch of bullshit. It might have blew 25, 30, 35, I don't know. But it certainly wasn't Force 11. And that's a serious thing to say, because Force 11 is a survival storm. You know, that's real shit. That people could die in a Force 11. I don't think you should be going around. I mean, maybe she just doesn't understand what she's saying, but I don't think you should go around making those kind of claims. Because if I sat here, people are like, oh, she over-exaggerates. She just over-exaggerates. And if I told you guys that I went through a Force 11 storm for 3 days, and that's why my boat broke, and then I got stuck out in the ocean for months, and it was because of this storm that set it all off, and it would be a lie. It wouldn't be me over-exaggerating. That'd be a straight lie. So I don't know. You know, obviously there's no 30-foot sharks, 10-knot currents in the middle of the ocean. She didn't have charts for any of the ports that she was passing or going to. Or she had an EPIR, but she didn't use it. She had mast steps. I did see a picture of her trying to do some repair up there on the spreader. So I guess she did go up there and try to do something. But it just looked like somebody wrapped a line around the spreader a bunch of times. Like, I don't know. Basically, we're never going to know whether this was a hoax that this lady put together who drew this other lady into the hoax, never telling her the truth, And it was all a big PR stunt. Either that's the case, or this is one of the most unprepared, unprofessional sailors I've ever heard of. You know, she was doing some GoFundMe thing to try to get people to buy her another boat. Don't buy her another boat. This is the last person on Earth that should be captaining ships out in the ocean. You know, assuming that it's not a hoax. You know, I don't know what to make of it. You know, I mean, first, there's just too many lies. Too many lies to know what's going on. It's actually gotten kind of weird. I saw something this morning where this guy, Linus Wilson, slow boat to the Bahamas, that's what it's called. He's went way deeper down the rabbit hole than I have, and he's basically come up with a huge amount of evidence for different lies, and I don't know, he's spent a lot of time and energy really researching this, and he's got a lot of good information, and it does expose how much BS is going on from the captain of that boat, Jennifer, I don't remember, Apple, I don't know how you say her last name. I have a hard time pronouncing names. it's getting crazy. I imagine you guys are bored of this story, right? Like, I got bored of this story a long time ago. I'm just bringing it up because, you know, it was the most televised sailing event that happened in all of 2017 in the United States of America, and that includes the America's Cup. I bet you those girls got more PR in the mainstream media than America's Cup did. They certainly got more PR than I did going around the Americas, but that's just the nature of the situation. You know, I mean, people don't really want to hear about successful stories where, you know, it's against the odds, and or maybe you think they would, I don't know. You know, small little 40-year-old boat and blah, 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 and then actually I succeed and I don't die. The guy who made the film Red Dot in the Ocean about my trip around the Americas jokes around with me. He's like, yeah, man, we'd be selling a lot more copies if you died. Don't get me wrong. We're selling plenty of copies, and we just got renewed for another year on PBS. Red Dot in the Ocean has been on PBS for the last 2 years. It's played in 88 cities across the country. And we just got our contract renewed for another year. I don't know how many stations, but that's good news. But anyways, you know, it's something about us. I don't know. I mean, it's a wacky story. I get it. You know, people, you know, a couple of girls being on a boat all these months in the ocean, yada, yada. I mean, I understand why the media jumped all over the story, but the problem is the media doesn't do its homework. So they don't realize, well, they just don't understand sailing. I mean, it's not their fault. You know, I mean, they just don't, you know, a lot of people don't understand the ocean. There's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to the ocean. So people just sort of believe these crazy stories. And these ladies were on every freaking Good Morning America, CNN, New York Times. And it was just a big lie. Even if the thing wasn't a hoax, they were still lying about a whole bunch of stuff that happened. So what does that tell you? I mean, the media gobbled it up. I got to cut the commercials. All right.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland. And now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
Hello and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford in Annapolis, Maryland, and this is the last Ocean Research podcast ever. But it's moving over to its own little independent world. It's going to be called Single Handed Sailing Podcast, found where all the other podcasts are. So, I'm going to give you guys a little update here. If you remember me telling you about Randall Reeves, he's trying to do something called the Figure 8, which is sailing around the Americas and around Antarctica, nonstop, single-handed. Sailing around Antarctica is basically the same thing as sailing around the world in the southern latitudes. You just have to stay further south. But yeah, it kind of looks like an eight. So he left on his trip. I'm actually going to pull the tracker up right now as I talk to you guys. It's amazing the new tracking devices they have. Randall has a particularly good one. It's called the Figure 8 Voyage. If you Google that, you'll find it somewhere on his website. It's a really good, I guess it's the same tracking device like Volvo Ocean Race and Vendée Globe and all these guys use. Anyways, he's having problems with his wind vane. And he can't sail the boat without a properly working wind vane. So a few days ago, some stuff broke and he had some spare parts, but he already had used them. And he has to retire to Argentina to try to fix the wind vane. I mean, it's one of the most fundamental, important pieces of gear you can have on your boat, especially as a single hander. And without it, you know, you'll never make it. You can't hand steer. So he's had to hand steer. I think it broke about 500 miles from land. I guess he doesn't have an autopilot. Because he's hand steering the boat. I don't know why he doesn't have an autopilot, because this would be a good time to have one. But, you know, I didn't have autopilot when I went around the Americas either. You know, we didn't have the money. So I do know what that's like. But, yeah, that really sucks for him, man. Right now, he's been in the ocean for 55 days, sailed 6,358 miles as of 38 minutes ago, and he's trucking along at 6.8 knots right now and about 40 knots of wind, and he's got 50 knots not far away. It looks like the west side of Cape Horn, really the west side of Patagonia, that whole area, is just getting hammered by a storm right now at around 50 knots, a force 10 storm. See, we're talking about Cape Horn, and I'm using force 10. I'm not even talking force 11. See, I don't like that. I don't like to be lied to. Anyway, I don't keep bringing that up. But anyways, Randall, he looks like he's a couple hundred miles at this point, and he looks like he's in some pretty bad stuff right now, and it looks even worse ahead, and he's got a hand steer through this, and he's already been hand steering for a couple of days. I'm sure he's been heaving to and getting some rest, but it's just, you know, that's just really difficult, and you know, I really feel for him. But you know, he'll get it fixed, and he'll continue on. I mean, he might not be able to do it nonstop, but he can still do a single-handed circumnavigation of Antarctica and the Americas, and I'm definitely rooting for him. I think what he's trying to do is really cool. And, you know, I'm always up for helping to promote single-handed sailing. And while I'm on that quick note, the new podcast isn't just single-handed. I'm also going to talk a lot about short-handed sailing. Short-handed sailing is when you got two people. Most situations I've come across with people actually cruising is a couple. Husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. It's usually two people on a boat. So between single-handing and short-handing, that really encompasses a lot of the blue water world. So I want to wrap up the story I've been telling you guys. So when single-handed starts, the story will really start with the trip around the Americas. So I need to wrap up this story of this whole sailing from Annapolis to Europe, Africa, the Caribbean and back single-handed trip I did between 2008 and 2010. And it was about a 15,500-mile trip, a couple years long. And so I was in Europe, I was in West Africa, now I'm in the Caribbean. I think, if I remember correctly, I got into Antigua, and I was broke. I didn't have any money, which is, you know, nothing new for me, but I did my last resupply in Gambia, in Banjul, the capital of Gambia in West Africa, which was some real basic stuff like pasta and rice. They have these little like bouillon cubes that they break up and sprinkle on their food. So I had a bunch of these African bouillon cubes. And I show up in Antigua, I had like $28 or something like that. And it barely, you know, I barely could get you a hamburger. I mean, I pull into Falmouth Harbor initially, and the massive, massive boats there, after spending, you know, the last couple months between Senegal and Gambia and going up the river and seeing these little poor mud hut villages, and now I'm looking at like $30 million sailboats. I don't know. And so I went over to the English Harbor for a little while. I just didn't have any money. You know, Antigua's cool. Antigua's great. But if you're broke, there's really not much going on there. So I went off to the Virgin Islands to get some work. Pulled into St. Thomas. I could work there without a visa. So but I had to renew the cruising. I had to do something, man. I mean, I had no money. And by this point, I really got no money. You know, I got like a few dollars or something. And I get to the Charlotte Amalie, the capital of St. Thomas, the big old anchorage there. It's a pretty nice anchorage. It's big enough that you can have some fetch, I guess, if it's blowing hard from the wrong direction, from like the south maybe. But it's a nice anchorage. They've got some big, like, I don't know, there was a marina there that got knocked out by some hurricanes, I guess in like the 90s, and they rebuilt it, and they rebuilt some sort of fancy, you know, they got like Louis Vuitton and, you know, I don't know, fancy ass shops and overpriced docks for mega yachts and crap like that. But I tried to find a job at first on these tourist boats. You know, they got like these tourist boats where they're like little pirate boats. They're kind of phony a bit. You know, they take people out and you raise the sails and it looks like a pirate boat. The thing probably sails like absolute crap because it's some replica tourist thing. But you know, I figured, well, hell, you know, I might as well get a job on a boat, you know, raising sails. I mean, why not? So I thought it would be easy. You know, I went to all these different there's quite a few of them in St. Thomas that take the tourists out, enough of them. And I went, and they weren't all the pirate ones. There's a variety of different, like, you know, boats that take tourists out. And so I went to all of them. And I tell them the story, yeah, you know, and I wasn't bragging or nothing, but I was like, yeah, you know, I just sailed alone across the Atlantic over to Europe, and I sailed Europe and Africa, and now I sailed back, you know, to the Caribbean. And basically what I was saying in a very nice manner is that I've done a shit ton of sailing, and, you know, if, you know, I know what I'm doing on a boat, and, you know, I want to work for peanuts. You know, basically I knew I wasn't going to be making anything. Nobody would hire me, you know, none of these places would hire me. And then, I don't know, well, right around, I didn't have much time. Luckily, they got something called a safari taxi. It's like $1 to ride like all over the island, basically. And so I could add, you know, I didn't have much money, but I could get around because it was so cheap on the safari. So anyways, like I'm going to leave Charlotte Amalie and start looking at different parts of the island for work. I'm sitting at this bar having a drink, and there's these two girls sitting next to me who are both like, I don't know, they're both in their 20s and they're both really hot. And they just, you know, and I'm just, well, I'm not trying to hit on them or nothing. I'm just sitting there having a drink and we're just talking, and I was talking a bit about sailing, and I was like, you know, yeah, I've been going around and looking for a job on these boats. And they're like, oh my God, us too. We both just got hired at, you know, such and such company, this pirate company thing. And, and then I realized, I was like, oh shit, I'm a total dumbass. These people don't want to hire somebody with, you know, sailing experience. They want to hire a girl that looks good in a bikini that can, you know, raise sails and pass out drinks. Like, they don't want my dumbass, you know? So that was sort of a wake-up moment for me within that industry. And so I was like, oh, shit. I went to some boatyards. It's hot, man. Even in the winter, it's hot down there for me. So I found a job at Island Marine. I was in Red Hook on the far side of St. Thomas, the east side. And Red Hook is where the ferry is. So if you want to go to like St. Thomas, if you want to go to St. John, Tortola, Joost Van Dyke, all that sort of stuff, there's a big ferry terminal, very active ferry terminal there. But the problem with that ferry terminal is that it wakes the crap out of you. So I get this job at Island Marine. It's like a West Marine in the Caribbean or something, and it has air conditioning. And, you know, you just stock the shelves. I mean, it's a real basic job, but I was broke. I was still living off of my transatlantic food. So I was still living off of Gambian food. I had been, you know, I had finished that transatlantic like 2-3 weeks ago, and yeah, still living off the food from the transatlantic. But eventually, you know, I got paid and started getting some paychecks, and you know, started eating better, and it was a pretty good situation for the most part. I was anchored off the beach in this anchorage, and they have these big ferries, and the ferries start waking you at 5:30 in the morning with like big massive wakes, and you know, it's like setting an alarm clock, and all day long you just get hit by these massive ferry wakes, just rocks the hell out of your boat. And early on I was swimming around, and I saw a line, a big heavy line that went to, I'm like, oh man, you know, that line looks nice. And I keep swimming, and it's connected to a chain. It's connected to two chains. It's connected to to two big screws. So basically I found a really good mooring setup just sitting on the bottom in 25 feet of water. It wasn't flotation. So I grabbed it up and tied myself off, and that's where the boat was for the next like 4 or 5 months while I worked and saved up money. I had a rowboat still. I was still rowing that stupid Avon Redcrest. And I would row myself because I was way out in the anchorage. I had a long way to go. It took like 15, 20 minutes of rowing. And it got to the point where, you know, you get to meet everybody in the anchorage because, you know, there's a bunch of other people living out in that anchorage. And it got hard to come back from work. Well, basically, I just got tired of getting hung over, I guess. Something about rum, I don't know what it is, but something about rum really trashes me. And I get these horrible hangovers. And I'll come back from work, and I'll be rowing my boat past everybody else. You know, it's 4 or 5 o'clock at night or whatever. People are starting to drink. And, you know, people invite you on board. Hey, come on over, have a rum. It's always rum and Coke. And it was always Cruzan rum. And if I never drink Cruzan again for the rest of my life, I'll be perfectly happy with that. Because Jesus, I've had epic hangovers. And what do you call a hangover if you're still drunk the next day when you wake up? Like, you wake up to go to work and you're still drunk. Like, what do you even call that? Is that a hangover? Like, I have no idea. Should it have a different name? Like a drunkover? I don't know. And it wasn't like I was trying to get drunk or be excessive. You know, it's just, at the end of the day, rum and Cokes go down real smooth. And, you know, you stop at this boat, you row, you stop at that boat. And it got to the point where I would try to hide. Sometimes when I rowed back to my boat, I would like sort of, I would row like away from the boats that I knew people. Because, you know, every morning I'd be hung over. And it was always from people, you know, I ain't complaining. It was really nice of various people to, you know, you want to be social and hang out with the people in the anchorage. There was one boat that was, they didn't even have an engine. They didn't have a mast. They didn't have any, it was literally just a floating condo. It was a big 40-some foot boat that I guess you could call it a sailboat. I mean, it didn't have a mast, but they went out and anchored it on some giant anchor, and, you know, they're sort of derelicts. And God, I would get so tired. They had this light off the back of their boat that they would shine on their dinghy so people didn't steal their dinghy at night. And the only person that did this in the anchorage. And the light would attract like little fish, little minnow-looking fish, you know, little fish. And they would attract the big giant tartans. And these tartans can be, these tarpons, they can be, I'm saying tartan like the sailboat. The tarpons can be like 6 feet long. I mean, these things are massive fish. And so we would get all drunk, and we would jump overboard, you know, at like midnight or whatever, and it's pitch black in the water, except for this beam of light coming down from this spotlight. And these tarpons, swear I can get this fish's name right. These tarpons would just swim into the light. It was like they appeared, like just boom, right in front of you. It's this giant freaking tarpon. And you're like swimming around all drunk with these giant 5-6 foot fish just appearing and disappearing right in front of you as they go through the light. I mean, it was awesome. It was it was a great way to spend a drunken evening. But anyways, you know, whatever. I mean, there are people that literally go down to the Caribbean on boats and just drop anchor and live there for years and years, and they just drink tons of rum like every day for years and years. And you can tell looking at them, like you can just tell like somebody that's in their 40s and 50s that has spent the last like 20 years in the islands just drinking rum every single day. And I didn't want to wind up, I didn't have much interest in the tourist business, you know, like I didn't really want to be a captain on charter boats. I didn't really want to work on, not professionally, like I was okay doing it just to like, you know, for a few months to get my cruising kitty back up to get money. But I didn't want to do, you know, be a charter captain for an actual, you know, for my future or something. And that was really the only future that I would have had down there. You know, I mean, I'm a sailor. I would work on boats or with boats or around boats. My whole life has been surrounded by sailing for a long time now, you know. But so I sailed back up to Annapolis, and I'll talk about that last part after commercials.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children, so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
This is Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine, and I love listening to Boat Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford in Annapolis, Maryland, trying to wrap this story up here. So I was in St. Thomas, working at Island Marine, hanging out in the anchorage, drinking too much rum, just sort of living the island life, you know, snorkeling a lot, swimming around. The beach I was next to was very popular on the weekends with the locals, and they would set up these giant speakers like right near my, I was pretty close to the beach, and it was this music. It was unbelievable. I'm pretty open towards music. I'm not trying to bash their music because what they like is what they like, but it seemed like it was the craziest. It was a form of reggae. It was like boom da boom da boom da boom da 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 boom da 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 da, like that high energy. At like absolute insanely loud with massive speakers pointed right at my boat. It would start at like 8 in the morning and it wouldn't end till 8 at night. It'd be like 12 hours of like dun 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 dun. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you even call that kind of music. I never heard anything like it before. It was like dance hall reggae on crystal meth or something. Like I don't even know what you make of it. But anyways, I wanted to get back to Annapolis. I quit my job at Island Marine about 6 weeks before I left the Caribbean. I started doing deliveries again. It became delivery season and boats were heading up north, and I could make better money doing deliveries than I would working in Island Marine. And my boat had a really strong mooring that it was tied off to, so I didn't have to worry about leaving my boat in the anchorage when I left to do these trips. So it was a pretty good situation. I brought up like a lagoon. Brand new lagoon from Puerto Rico. I brought up a couple of lagoons from Puerto Rico over time. Interesting, a catamaran in the ocean. On one hand, you can put down your cup of coffee and forget about it in 20 knots of wind and come back on watch later and your coffee is still sitting there. On the other hand, you get waves come in and they slap, you get hull slap. They come in and they slap one hull and they bounce over and slap the other hull. And it sounds like somebody's doing road construction right underneath your boat. It's loud. You know, you might, if you're going to do a catamaran delivery, you might want to bring some earplugs with you so it'll help you sleep at night. But anyway, so I left on a trip, had a bit of money saved up. We're now talking June. I think this is around late June. It was later than I wanted it to be. You know, we're getting into hurricane season now. And so, and also my engine was more or less broken. It was working, but if you remember when I was 200 miles up the Gambia River, I had a problem with my heat exchanger. I put some putty stuff on it, which seemed to hold, got me back down the river or whatever, back to the ocean. And then when I did that transatlantic, I only used like 4 or 5 gallons of diesel, something like that. I didn't use much. Maybe it was 6 gallons, whatever it was. So I've been babying my engine for a long time. And so anyways, I take off. I'm heading north, heading up to the Chesapeake Bay. And I have a single sideband. And I'm just sort of being bored. And, you know, I had a weather forecast when I left, but basically a tropical storm developed. It was the first storm of the year. It had an A. I don't remember what its name was, but it was something with an A. And it was, I was looking, listening to the single sideband, the reports, and I'm like, oh, crap, this thing's going to run me over if I'm not careful. So I turn off to the Bahamas to run from this tropical storm. And I ran a little further in than I probably had to. The winds were supposed to be out of the east, so I ran in between south of Cat Island up into the Exumas, came up the Exuma Sea, and ended up passing through a little cut just south of Highborn Cay in the Exumas and an anchoring behind this little island called Oyster Cay or Oyster Key or whatever it is. Little tiny thing, nobody living on it. And, you know, it was, I went in further than I needed to. I probably could have just hid behind Cat Island, but I wanted to get a lot of, shelter base, a lot of stuff to break the waves up. And so I was, you know, I had some time to kill. You know, I had like a day, 24 hours or something before this tropical storm was going to come. And I was feeling pretty good about it. You know, I was feeling about as good as you could feel about the fact you're going to ride out a tropical storm on anchor in the Bahamas. I mean, it's not a great situation, but I felt good about it. So I take my stupid little Avon Red Crest and I row myself over to, Highborn has a marina. And it was like, I don't know, $8 for a dozen eggs and like $25 for a 6-pack of beer. Something unbelievable. And I went on the beach and drank my beers. And, you know, you're just chilling. It's so beautiful. The water in the Exumas is so beautiful. If you go to the Bahamas, it's not the land. So don't get it twisted in your mind. People go to the Bahamas and they bitch. Oh, I thought the Bahamas was supposed to be so great. Oh, the Bahamas, it's ugly. Well, you know, you're not going to look at the land. If you want to look at land, go to like, I don't know, well, the Virgin Islands were really nice for that before they got smashed by the hurricanes. There's certainly some beautiful islands in the Caribbean that have big mountains and whatnot, St. Lucia. And you're not going to find that at Bahamas. Bahamas is flat. You're not going there for the land. You're going there for the water. The water is beautiful. So anyways, I go over and, you know, back to the boat, and I ain't really got nothing to do, so I'm just sitting there waiting, having a couple of beers. So I decided to go check out this little island that's in front of me, this Oyster Key or K or whatever it is. And I row over and pull my boat up, and it's a really weird island. It's like, I think it was limestone. It had all these, I don't know, best way to describe it. It had a lot of pockmarks, like holes, and it was really spiky, like the rock had been eaten away by the ocean in a way that made lots of little holes. And some of these holes were big enough you could put your foot in them. Some of them were, you know, smaller than a hole at a golf course. Some of them were big enough you could fall down inside of them. There were all different sizes and shapes. And this entire island was basically covered in it. You could not walk around barefoot. It was just too spiky. And the center of the island had a bunch of like low-lying foliage, you know, sort of dense, low-lying foliage. So anyways, I'm just walking around, you know, hopping around these holes. It's a really weird, I mean, this is the sort of thing you see in the Bahamas. You know, I haven't seen anything like it anywhere else in the world as far as this sort of rock formations created. So I'm walking around and I don't go over the top. The island is shaped kind of like a banana. So I didn't feel like cutting straight over. So I walked, you know, the long way around, and I've been on the island for about 45 minutes, and I decide, you know, it's just what I've seen, what I'm going to see, and I'll go back to the boat. So I decide to cut over the top of the island, the shortcut, through the foliage. And I'm walking through the foliage, and I end up falling down one of these holes. And it's not, it wasn't that deep, but, you know, I just didn't see it, and it was big, and I fell a couple of feet. And I land on this trash bag. And, you know, I'm like, wow, what the hell is this? You know, I'm kind of dirty, and I look at this trash bag. What, you know, what is all this? So I open up this bag, and it's filled with ganja, like pounds and pounds of ganja. And I'm like, holy shit. But this is like Blackbeard's treasure, you know? But my excitement quickly faded when I realized that it's probably been in that hole for 20 years, and it was completely rotten. It smelled like ammonia. Like, it smelled real strong like ammonia. It was just, you hear these stories about the Exumas being this drug-running place, you know, cocaine especially, but I guess pot too. And yeah, this was like leftovers from the heydays in the Exumas when people used to run drugs through the Exumas. They used to run them on airplanes. It was like a base, you know, they would run them up, drop them off there, and then they'd use that to get it to the States. And so anyways, I went back to the boat, threw most of it, you know, I didn't really, threw it back in the hole, basically. Went back to the boat and went to wait out this tropical storm. And the tropical storm never really came. You know, it did blow, I don't know, 30, 35, maybe 40. But it ended up veering further offshore. I had gotten enough distance. I didn't really get that many effects. And it was over pretty soon. So I get back underway. I'm beating into it, trying to get through the Eleuthera Cut to get back out in the ocean between Cat Island and Eleuthera. And my engine starts overheating. And it's just one thing after another with that damn engine. And I couldn't get it to stop. There was problems with the engine. There were more than I could fix underway. And I wasn't going to turn back and try to get the engine fixed. I didn't have a lot of money and I didn't have a lot of time. I needed to get up to the bay. So I just continued sailing with a broken engine. And I've done a lot of sailing with broken engines. You don't need an engine in the ocean. I mean, it's nice when you get to an inlet, but you don't really need one for the most part. But anyways, I'm sailing along, and I get north of the Bahamas, and I cut over into the Gulf Stream, and it's July now, like early July, and the wind dies completely. I mean, completely dies. And this happens in July. You can get long areas, long time periods with very light winds off the east coast of the United States in July. And this was weirdest thing. Weirdest damn thing. I mean, it just completely died and didn't come back. So I have a broken engine, and I have no wind, and I'm sitting in the Gulf Stream, and I'm basically just riding the Gulf Stream north at, you know, a couple of knots, and just bobbing, thinking, okay, well, the wind will pick up. Every day I think that, okay, the wind will pick up. You know, 1 week becomes 2 weeks, and then the fish start to congregate around your boat, just like they congregate around anything floating around in the ocean long enough. It starts off with the little fish. You know, you notice little schools, little tiny fish, because they're using your boat for protection, to hide, you know, up against your hull. But the little fish attract the big fish. So, you know, you start seeing a mahi there, and then some tuna, you know, start coming, and more fish come, and more fish. You become like this floating reef, you know, after a couple of weeks and not moving anywhere. I remember there's one mahi would swim around my boat, and I would throw a lure right in front of it, behind it. I would, you know, and the mahi would always come right up to the lure like it had interest and then turn away at the last second. It went on like that. That mahi hung out around my boat for probably 5 or 6 days. And for 5 or 6 days, I could not get that. I mean, I put all sorts of lures in front of it. I tried everything. It just, I couldn't fool it, man. It was, the mahi was smart, I guess. But, you know, time just kept going. It just kept going. I didn't have AIS on that trip. It was pretty early on, 2008, for AIS when I left. I remember waking up at one point, and a freighter was passing right by me. And I realized that in my sleep, I had very, very slowly sailed right across its bow as it was coming right at me. And nobody on the freighter saw me, because the thing, I mean, it damn near ran me over. And it's one of those like close encounters with a freighter, and you don't even realize till after you wake up from your nap, you know, how close it was. And, you know, that's the difficulty of being a single-hander without AIS. I mean, freighters running you over is a big concern. I don't even know how long it took me to get to the bay. I stopped counting. I stopped counting around day 17 or something. It took me somewhere like 3 weeks to get from the Bahamas to the Chesapeake Bay. It should have took me, on a 32-foot boat, it should have took me 5 days, maybe 6 days, maybe 7 days if it's, you know, slow. But, you know, if you have no wind and you have no engine, I basically rode the Gulf Stream all the way up to Hatteras. And I had to fight really hard to get out of the Gulf Stream because the Gulf Stream turns and starts heading towards Europe. And it took me like an entire day of fighting with light winds just to get out of the grasp of the Gulf Stream. And my friend PJ, who was there when I came back from my trip around the Americas and right now is sitting in prison. But my friend PJ was down there with his girlfriend at the time in Virginia Beach. So I came in Virginia Beach. I've been out to sea for a long time. I saw the dude. Man, his girlfriend got so drunk one night. She stripped down butt naked. Well, PJ was passed out drunk. I was behaving. And she had run out of the freaking hotel room butt naked right out on the boardwalk in Virginia Beach where like all these people and tourists are. And I'd have to go chasing after her. Can you imagine seeing a butt-naked girl running around on a boardwalk in Virginia Beach and then having some other dude practically tackle her, pick her up over his shoulder, and carry her back into the hotel room like a caveman? I'm surprised nobody called the police on me. I mean, I wasn't doing it. I was trying to bring her inside, you know? She was being crazy. So anyways, this whole weird thing with, you know, that's PJ for you. He knows how to pick them. And so I was there a couple days. They went back to Ohio. It was a nice little thing. And then I sailed up to Chesapeake Bay. Going up the Chesapeake Bay without an engine really, really sucks. It took me like 3 days to get, you know, do the 100 miles to get up the bay because the winds were really light. You're tacking over to one side of the bay. You're tacking back to the other side. You're tacking over. You're tacking back. At one point, I was sailing along. I needed to take a nap because I haven't slept much in that three-day period. And I get a little nap and for like 20 minutes. And when I fell asleep, the wind changed direction right afterwards, which means with the wind vane, my boat changed directions. And I wake up and I look at the tracking on the GPS, and my line went right over a lighthouse in a Chesapeake Bay, which means I must have sailed within feet. Like, I fell asleep, the wind changed direction, my boat changed direction, and sailed within probably 5 or 10 feet right past one of these round lighthouses in the bay. I'm lucky. Well, I was going slow. It wouldn't have been that bad if I hit it. But, I mean, nobody wants to hit a lighthouse. You know, it's just a weird thing. So, anyways, eventually I made it back to Annapolis, and my friend Brian came out, and I pulled the boat into a marina with a dinghy because my engine was broke. So I ended up taking my dinghy and pulling it in as a rowboat. My Avon Red Crest was my towboat. And I got it in a slip, and the trip was done. And what am I going to do next? What the hell am I going to do now? I'm back in Annapolis, and what am I going to do with myself? What's next? So yeah, we'll get into all that on the show Single-Handed Sailing Podcast. You can find it where you find all the other podcasts. Starting January 1st, it'll be out every week. Basically the same show, except a little more refined. I want to have some, you know, short interviews and blah, blah, blah. You've already heard me say it. If you're looking to buy a boat, I also work for David Walters Yachts, and I'll be happy to be your buyer's agent and help you figure out what boat is going to be best for you. And if you're looking to sell your boat, I've been selling a lot of boats lately. I've actually been doing really well selling boats. And, you know, David Walters Yachts is, you know, we're known for high-end blue water boats. You know, we sell some of the best boats built. So, all right, guys, hope you check me out on the Single-Handed Podcast. You know, big thanks to Mike, Boat Radio. You know, I'm really honored that I could be part of this. And yeah, you know, you guys have a good holidays. Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. Have a happy time and a good new year, and I'll talk to you guys in 2018.
A man on a mission. With a plan to expand my vision. Yeah, it's either this or it's prison. I'm trying to be free and expand my wisdom. I gotta tell my story. I did it for the journey, the glory. Many men tried way before me. I had to do it bigger cause I had to make history. From the streets to the sea, far away, not a soul did I see. from Chesapeake up to Baffin Bay. My motto is hard work first and laugh and play. Now let's take a trip through the Northwest Passage. Some say I got a problem, I say it's a passion. I'm just trying to reach my goals before passing, and I'ma do what I wanna do without asking. It's my life, my right, so I fight for my dreams. No matter how hard it might seem, this is my pipe dream. My advice to get your mind right, find light and do the right thing. No matter the weather or whatever the night brings, thunder and lightning, it's enlightening. Lost in the abyss, I can't even begin to explain how awesome this is. I've been all around the world and back, around the world, to find myself, to reach my goals, to find my dreams. When I'm away, to wash away, I explore. I've been all around the world and back, around the world, to find myself, to reach my goals, to find my dreams. When I'm away, to wash away, I explore. I've been all around the world and back, all around the world and back, all around the world and back. I've been all around the world and back, world and back, world and back. I've been all around the world and back, all around the world and back, all around the world and back. I've been all around the world and back, world and back, world and back. For gold, it was a mission to get rich. I do it for soul. They thought that I was a misfit, it would probably fall. But I'm the type to go the distance and finish the brawl. They said that it was suicide, that I would die for sure. But I was like the prince of tide in the eye of a storm. Yo, the great waves, they send sailors crashing. You're on the map, I'm on the face of the atlas. Thousands of miles away, I'm trying to see the world while you sit at home, probably doing the same thing. The fact that you don't want to get out and explore is a damn shame. It's either you're too lazy to do it or you just can't hang. Trend set up, major sailor, the vendetta, breaking the world record, no one can do it better. There's so much in the world you must see, and you can make a big difference, just you and me. I've been all around the world and back, around the world, to find myself, to reach my goals, to find my dreams. When I'm away, to wash away, I explore. I've been all around the world and back, around the world, to find myself, to reach my goals, to find my dreams. When I'm away, to wash away, I explore. I've been all around the world and back, all around the world and back, all around the world and back. I've been all around the world and back, world and back, world and back. I've been all around the world and back, all around the world and back, all around the world and back. I've been all around the world and back, world and back, world and back. I've been all around the world, 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 world.
When you're ready to escape, but your boat's not ship-shape, that's okay, skipper's review will get you on your way. Marina's mechanic, satellites, and crew, skippersreview.com will fight it for you. Friends will tell you which ones to use in just a few words with their glowing reviews. SkippersReview.com, where boaters know best and businesses pass the test.